Good morning, everyone. Today we're continuing the series that we started over a month ago now, the seven miraculous signs that the Apostle John presents to us in his book, as in his gospel, as significant in the ministry of Jesus. And if it's significant in the ministry of Jesus, it should be significant in our ministry. Of all 27 books in the New Testament, the Gospel of John most clearly teaches the deity and preexistence of Christ. And together with the Gospel of Matthew, the Gospel of John provides the most striking proofs of Jesus' messiahship. We're going to read about one of those today. These proofs that John has given includes his narration of seven messianic signs that John had personally witnessed. Each one of these signs emphasizes a way that that particular sign reveals, number one, Jesus' messianic nature, and two, the striking nature of that particular feat. We've already looked, as I said, over the past several weeks, we have already looked at two of these signs. First, Greg spoke and told us about Jesus turning the water into wine. Now, told us doesn't mean for the first time, I hope. Okay, he just spoke about that and went deeper into it. And that was at the wedding in Cana. And Jesus' mom figured into that in a very interesting way. However, then, next, on another Sunday later, Carlton helped us focus on the long-distance healing Jesus performed on the royal official's son. Please open your Bible to John chapter 5. Today's lesson is the third of these seven signs. And it's the healing of a disabled man who had been an invalid for 38 years. This sign, it happened in Jerusalem, where Jesus had traveled to attend a Jewish festival. Let's read and reflect on John's eyewitness account. We're going to start at verse 1. Sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for a feast of the Jews. Now there is in Jerusalem, near the sheep gate, a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Here, a great number of disabled people used to lie. The blind, the lame, the paralyzed. Jesus' day was a whole lot different than ours. There were many sick and desperate people at this place. And this wouldn't have been the only place where they would have gathered. Jesus, as we will see, would choose one of them to demonstrate to all, not just there, but all throughout time to us today. And he would demonstrate to all who would pay attention to him. There's times when I say, how could anyone not pay attention to Jesus? But I spent, over half my life not paying attention to Jesus. Thanks be to his mercy, that's changed. And to realize through these things that we're reading that Jesus was one with God. We're talking here about Jesus' deity, his divineness. And now, let's read verse 5. One who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. Said that in the beginning. However, let's just think about that. This was not the days of medical miracles that we have had in the last century. However, there were only certain ways they could actually keep on living. But this supports, this healing, which we're going to see, of a person that has been in this condition for 38 years, is an incredible feat. And the way he does it is incredible. It's a striking nature of what was about to happen. Just a little side note here. And I didn't realize this until I was in the process of reviewing this with someone. Not every translation, and in fact, the NIV that I'm using, does not have a verse 4. And that might sound strange to people, but if you look down at the bottom, at least in the bottom of my Bible, it says for the end of verse 3 and all of verse 4. And it says, I like the pride in this writer. I don't like it. I notice it. He says in the note, some less important manuscripts, of course, this is not one of them, is implied. After the word paralyzed in verse 3, it continues, and they waited for the moving of the waters. Appropriate song, Cameron, that you just sang. From time to time, an angel of the Lord would come down and stir up the waters. The first one into the pool, after each such disturbance, would be cured of whatever disease he had. Well, why would they leave that out? Well, the reason they would leave it out is that many scholars, and as a result, many translations, do not have that verse because they think it was a superstition of the day that had built up tradition by tradition, and that there was no angel that stirred the waters. Could have been the wind or anything else. And because of this, it's been determined, at least by some scholars that I've checked it with, not personally, but what they read. I'm not that old. Probably it was not improved. This superstition wasn't approved by official Judaism. And hence, a lot of translators omit it from this portion. Now, after I get a sip of water, I am fighting a chest cold. And believe me, it dries your mouth. I wasn't sure if I was going to be speaking in this voice or one that was a lot croakier. Let's hope it holds together for another 5 minutes or so, okay? Reading in verse 6. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, "Do you want to get well?" "Sir," the invalid replied, "I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me." Then Jesus said to him, "Get up, pick up your mat, and walk." At once, the man was cured. He picked up his mat and walked. Wow. Can you imagine this guy? Somebody says, after 38 years, pick up your mat and walk. He must have had a little bit of faith, because he didn't just sort of, "I can't walk." he picked up his mat and walked. Now, I don't know how many minutes might have transpired between Jesus saying that and to him walking. The Bible doesn't tell us that because obviously it's not important. But here's the thing. It was, if you wish, instantly the man got well. I can't think of a more striking and miraculous feat to witness, and one that only God could have performed. The second part of verse 9. The day on which this took place was a Sabbath. And so the Jews said to the man who had been healed, "It is the Sabbath. The law forbids you to carry your mat." They were concerned about whether he carried his mat on the Sabbath, not that he got well after 38 years. But he replied, "The man who made me well said to me, 'Pick up your mat and walk.'" So they asked him, "Who is this fellow who told you to pick it up and walk?" Implication, because we want to deal with him. Really, they weren't asking just out of curiosity. The man who was healed had no idea who it was, for Jesus had slipped away into the crowd that was there. Later, Jesus found him at the temple and said to him, "See, you are well again. Stop sitting, or something worse may happen to you." I would love to know what prompted that comment. But we don't have to know because it isn't that important, obviously. The man went away and told the Jews that it was Jesus who made him well. What an interesting, not fairy tale, not allegory, but true story we have just read. In verse 10, those words, "The law forbids you to carry your mat," well, it sounds like they're saying the law, meaning it's for them from the Old Testament. That is not so. Those words do not come from any previous or subsequent biblical passage. Well, where had they come from? The man, according to these Jewish leaders, had actually violated not the Bible, but a man-made rabbinical code that prohibited the carrying of an object, quote, "from one domain to another," unquote, on the Sabbath. These are extra biblical. They fill books with them. In the hundreds and thousands of years that the Jewish leaders had in tradition, boy, they spent a lot of time just nitpicking. And I understand that even today in Orthodox, if people know this, you can say, "Yeah, that's true, Glenn." You can't even turn a light switch on the Sabbath, on the Jewish Sabbath. Wow. Well, of course, not turning a light switch on might make for a lower power bill, but that's another thing. That's another thing. Now, in this way, writing these not from God, but from man, different aspects of this rabbinical code, in this way, the Jewish leaders felt justified in accusing Jesus of enticing the man to sin. And we see that as we subsequently read through the rest beyond this passage. They refer to it as blasphemy. It just boggles the mind that they cannot see the truth before their eyes. And that's what I say before, for those who choose to listen, there are still so many who don't. And these Jewish leaders were among those back then. This type of persecution of Jesus by the Jewish leaders continued from this time right up to his death. There are two very important results of each of the seven significant messianic signs. John tells us what these are in his narrative of the first sign. Let's go back there. Turn back to John 2. And in verse 11, we read, "This, the first of his miraculous signs, Jesus performed at Cana in Galilee. He thus revealed his glory, and his disciples put their faith in him." The important results for us today: Jesus was displaying his glory. He was making it aware. He was doing it to make people aware that he was the Messiah. And here's what he was doing things that only God could do. So he displayed his glory or his divinity. Second, his disciples, the 12 that were with him, believed in him. Before Jesus had to get anyone else believing, he worked on the ones who were going to carry the message after he died. So he was getting his disciples believed in him. And if you if you're like me, there's a lot of examples in the Bible during the 3 years of ministry. Some of these guys seem to be pretty dense. And they seem to have very short memories. But thankfully, they hung in there. And because of that, and because of their writings, because of this book, we can also be inspired by and led by that man who was God. Now I would like to turn to, like us to turn to John chapter 20. This will be the last passage we read. In conclusion to this little, I think relatively short lesson on one of the three miraculous signs, there is one other result of the miracles that Jesus performed. Because not only did they display Jesus' glory, his divinity, not only did his disciples begin to truly, deeply believe in him, the result is of critical, and I mean this critical importance for all people, this third result, especially because it is directed to all people, and especially each and every one of us sitting here today. Reading in verse 30 of John 20. Jesus did many other miraculous signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. Amen.